What a show we have for you, dear fantasy football listener. What a week three we had. We had predictable outcomes like the Falcons blowing it late. We have Will Levis taking 8 sacks, throwing picks. Dallas not stopping the run. Shocking results in Minnesota, Los Angeles, Tampa Bay. We have tight ends doing nothing. Malik Nabers doing whatever he wants. Kyren Williams doing just about everything despite no offensive line with the Rams. There's no time to waste. Time to get into it. Breaking down week three. It's Monday. It's September 23rd, and I am Scott Pianowski, pinch hitting for Matt Harmon today. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. This is where we knock out everything that happened in a busy week three in the National Football League. I'm going to bring in Andy Behrens in a minute to go over the meat of the slate, but the beginning of the show is the solo portion. We talk Sunday Night Football. So let's give it up to Kansas City Chiefs, man. Can't get rid of this team. They're 3-0. They beat the Atlanta Falcons 22-17. And what do we care about? What don't we care about? Well, Rashee Rice has become the meal ticket in the Kansas City offense. He's basically become the Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce's running clear out routes. It was Rice who had 12 catches in this game, 110 yards, touchdown, shook off a late injury and returned. Kelce has a quiet 4 for 30. We've seen a lot of this, man. We saw last year they soft pedaled Kelce, turned him on in the playoffs. And it looks like Rashee Rice, barring a suspension, the sky's the limit for this kid. I could see him catching 125, 130 balls. The Falcons knew it was coming. They couldn't stop him. So that's our biggest takeaway, is that this offense belongs to Rashee Rice. And who does the backfield belong to? Well, Carson Steele got the first chance to run with the 17 for 72 on the ground. They sprinkled in a little bit of P. Ryan's. Samaje P. Ryan, we know, is more of a third down back, a blocking back. He picked up 6 carries in this game. Maybe Kareem Hunt will eventually play his way off the practice squad. What I don't care about is how the Falcons called plays at the end of this game. They had a chance to win it. Possession didn't go very well. Third and short, fourth and short. They ran wide on the fourth down play, and the Chiefs snuffed it out. It was a very inefficient game for Bijan Robinson, 16 for 31. Did get a touchdown, so a little deodorant to get him through his fantasy day. Tyler Algier actually outrushed him on 7 carries. But you know, Kirk Cousins still starting to knock the rust off. We saw some of that in the Philadelphia game on Monday. We saw some of it tonight. We know this offense is all about Drake London running routes and Ray McLeod running routes and Bijan Robinson in the pass game. Darnell Mooney was involved in this game. And Kyle Pitts only had 2 catches against a team that hasn't guarded the tight end very well this year. One of them was a 50-yarder in the great tight end blackout of 2024. We take what we can get. I mean, it was better than what Kelce did. But I still think the Falcons are going to be the team to beat in the NFC South. We saw the Saints have a step back today, and at least we're knocking off the rust with Cousins. Robinson will have better days ahead. It's a pretty concentrated offense. So I know 17 points doesn't satisfy you. I know 2 yards a carry for Bijan Robinson is disappointing. I know Kyle Pitts is driving us crazy, but the Falcons are going to be a top 10 offense. I'm going to stick by that. I know they haven't really showed that through 3 weeks, but we have to be patient. And with that, let's get Andy Behrens in here. We got tackle the meat of the show. A lot of crazy football happened. That's any NFL Sunday. And Andy Behrens is going to help us break it all down next. And joining me now is my good friend, Mr. Andy Behrens. Andy, week three, it was crazy. There were upsets. There were confusion results. There were comebacks. I'm still trying to make sense of it. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It is a pleasure to be here with you. Very good to see your face on a Sunday night. I'm good. You and I, by the way, know, and our colleague Dalton as well, know this to be as difficult a week in fantasy as there is, because we got not only this going on, but like we got the head-to-head semifinals in fantasy baseball. Those of us with fantasy baseball empires we got wars on multiple fronts here. So this is a tough week.
Yeah, I think one of my teams was eliminated in the championship round. It's a week that plays a week earlier. And by the way, let's just spill it out there for fantasy baseball. Head-to-head is a lot more fun than Roto, right?
It's really fun. Yeah, that's how sports work. I don't know. That's my favorite format in fantasy, because that's just how sports work. That's why fantasy football is so successful. You get a head-to-head matchup every week. It's fun.
Right. And you know what's really fun, Andy, is when a game is not competitive and garbage time kicks in, and then garbage time gets really fun. And actually, it's a game again. And of course, I'm talking about many games, but let's talk about the Baltimore Ravens and the Dallas Cowboys. Baltimore gets the 28-25 victory. But basically, this game is cut to two pieces, right? 28-6 Baltimore after three quarters. It's over. Should Dallas pull Zach? They pulled Zeke a long time ago. Should they pull Dak Prescott? Then the fourth quarter, Dak gets hot. Dallas gets an onside kick, which happens, you know, once every 5 months, it feels like. They've just made that play a non-entity. And we get a crazy finish. We get a lot of Dallas passing stuff. But not even though Baltimore got the win, I don't think it was the most fun of fantasy games for them. What do you take away from this match?
Yeah, no. First of all, a desperately needed win for Baltimore, a team that could not go 0-3 with, I believe, the Buffalo Bills looming, right? So huge win for them. But this was not fundamentally different from the first 2 weeks in certain respects, right? Because the key difference, obviously, between last year's Ravens and this year's Ravens is they don't stop you. This is not last year's dominant defense. And that just got underscored again. Dallas gets to 25 against them. Like, I don't know. I just feel like last year's Ravens would have put this thing away. That was a defense that was holding opponents to like 16 points per game. So far this year, it's been about 20, I think it was 26 and a half points per game entering the week. They don't shut you down when it's time to shut you down. Like, it's another week where you look at the box score for the Ravens and you're like, yeah, it's pretty much everything I would have expected. Derrick Henry, great day, over 150 yards on the ground, a couple of touchdowns. Lamar Jackson, very good dual threat day. You know, all the receivers except for Mark Andrews involved. That's a separate question, but it's everything you really want or expect from the Ravens, and yet they can't stop you at the end. So credit to Dallas for making a game of it when it seemed like, you know, it was a laugher and long over. It wasn't. The NFL is that way. You know, we saw multiple games that followed kind of a similar script. But I'm uptight if I'm a Ravens fan. Like, you're happy to get a win, but man, this is a fundamentally different team than the one we saw last year.
I'm going to push back on just the last part of the Baltimore thing that you said. Nobody in this receiver room, pass catching room that we needed got home, right? Likely was quiet again. Andrews was a non-factor. It was a quiet game, just four targets for Zay Flowers. I'm getting start sit questions of all of those guys every week. And on one hand, I'm like, well, yeah, they're tied to Baltimore infrastructure. They're tied to Lamar Jackson, two-time MVP. They're tied to a team that should put up 30 every week. And yet I don't feel there's any kids. I don't think they have a consistent pitch in their passing game. And so much of it is going to be chewed up by Henry when they're leading, Lamar with his legs. What can you tell people? And obviously, we have a panic meter show coming in 24 hours. I'll be on that show with Dalton Del Don. But I got some antsy people out there with Raven pass catchers. What do you tell them?
I'd feel good about Zay Flowers and not particularly comfortable with anybody else. But again, I think that kind of fits with preseason expectations, or it should have. I understand concern about Andrews. That's a real thing. But you have to remember, this was not a normal 28-25 game. This game was 28-6 and it was over. So it wasn't time to throw the ball. Like, they got there with Lamar and Derrick Henry, and all of a sudden the game seemingly ended. It's a three touchdown game. And Dallas just wouldn't stop. So, the game script comes into play with this one. But I agree, basically, that the only receiver that I'm going to trust week in and week out that I'm going to feel really good about starting is Zay Flowers. I have Isaiah Likely in a bunch of places. And, you know, it sure seems like that's going to take an injury to one of the tight ends to make the other one really an every week must play, which is a weird thing to say. I don't know. Tight end is weird this year. Nobody's doing anything. Dallas Goedert tried to save the position this week and it didn't fully work.
Yeah, I could ask a lot of Dallas Goedert questions, and I'm pretty sure I gave the wrong answer on all of them. You know, for all the garbage time that Dallas got in this game, and Dak gets home with two touchdown passes, he runs in a touchdown. The running game didn't go anywhere. It was Rico Dowdle getting more of the work than Zeke, so maybe that's a sea change, but neither one of them were effective. The Dallas passing chart, it's the phone book, man. We're old enough to remember phone books. Nobody has a phone book now. You just have a phone, which has all your contacts. Nobody knows anybody's phone number anymore. I think people would have to look up 911 if they needed it. That's just the world that we live in. But they target 12 different guys. Now, Ferguson's healthy again. He gets there 11 targets, six catches. He was good. CeeDee Lamb left some plays on the table, but we're not here to worry about CeeDee Lamb. I feel like there's waiver wire teases all over this offense. One week I'm going to try to pick up Turpin. He had a touchdown in this game. Jalen Tolbert's a playmaker. Every once in a while, Brandon Cooks makes a play. It wasn't in this game. Other than Lamb, who's a god, other than Ferguson, who in the great tight end drought of 2024 will welcome a healthy Jake Ferguson, is there something to be found in this Dallas passing game? Or is it just, you know, okay, if you can time the market, good for you, but there's nothing we can really project week in, week out?
I think Tolbert certainly passes the eye test. I'm interested in him. But obviously the sort of spin the wheel nature of the passing game makes him a very difficult start until we get into the bye weeks. Brandon Cooks, we got to remember, in the second half last year was like a top 20 wide receiver and scored just about every week. I think it was 8 touchdowns in his final 12 games. So I think it'll come back around to Brandon Cooks at some point. He's a very good longtime pro, probably not a Hall of Famer, but a Hall of Very Good guy, right? So I think it may come around to him again. But there's nobody in this receiving core outside the two you mentioned who's a must start now.
I do think that maybe we're all scrambling in the running back streets. Maybe when the game scripts are better, Rico Dowdle could be somebody that we take another look at. But I do agree with you with your takeaway on the ancillary pieces in that passing game. Andy, I need to cleanse my palate. I need to look at an offense that's really easy to figure out, and that's the Minnesota Vikings right now with league MVP Sam Darnold. They roll over C.J. Stroud and the Texans 34-7, never competitive game. And look, I would follow Kevin O'Connell into a burning building right now. As long as it wasn't Bryce Young's house, I think we'd all be safe. Darnold throws 4 touchdowns, 4 different guys. Everybody gets home that we wanted to play. Jefferson gets home. Aaron Jones gets home. And maybe Darnold is having his Geno Smith year. Maybe he just the timing was wrong. He was on the Jets for crying out loud. He got mono. You know, then he goes to San Francisco. He never got a chance to play. Three games, man. I know one game you don't know. 2 games, it could still be a blip. We could all laugh about it down the road. I've seen enough to Sam Darnold that forget him being good enough for Justin Jefferson shares and all that or Aaron Jones shares. Yeah. I want to play Sam Darnold on my teams.
Yeah, no, he's going to be he's obviously going to be featured in pickups this week. There's no like these last 2 games, 449 yards and 6 touchdowns against the Niners and Texans. Now, are those flawed teams? Sure, they're flawed teams, but they are 2 teams that we expected at one point to make deep postseason runs perhaps this year. So it's not like he's doing this. You know, it was easy to dismiss the Giants game, I think week 1, right? But man, you do this to the Niners and the Texans in back-to-back weeks. This was supposed to be the hard part of the schedule, right? These were supposed to be the games that got Darnold booted out of the starting job and cleared the path for J.J. McCarthy, and they've done anything but. You have national analysts and the NFL's social feeds itself declaring Sam Darnold to be an MVP candidate. And shoot, if they had to vote for the award right now after 3 weeks, he'd probably be it. Remarkable start to his season. And we didn't even see, you know, there's like a dash of rushing appeal to his game too. And we didn't even get that today. They didn't need it because they were in total control of this game. Like there's not to say that he's like a fully accredited dual threat guy, but we saw in the Carolina years a little bit, like if he has to run the ball, he can do it. We saw it last week. So that's part of his game as well. There's an awful lot of fantasy appeal here. And he's the guy who gets to throw to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison when he's healthy. And that's another thing. We haven't seen the fully operational version of this offense yet, right? We haven't gotten a week with Hockenson and Addison and Jefferson and Aaron Jones just all in it together. So it's totally possible that we haven't seen the best of Sam Darnold yet.
Yeah, the next week they go to Green Bay, a showdown with either Jordan Love or Malik Willis. So that'll be a fun time. Now, look, Houston just one of those days for Houston. You just blow it off. That things didn't click today. At least when they did throw the ball, all the targets were really congested to Diggs, Collins, and Dell. It's what we wanted to see. I know none of them got touchdowns. Cam Akers had a really poor game. If you streamed him, he did get the receiving touchdowns. At least you got something out of him. But I have to figure this is just one of those. Every team, even good teams, even good offenses are going to have a couple of games like this that you write them off. They don't make sense.
I'll just say Coach Flores will make anybody uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And he had C.J. Stroud looking uncomfortable a little bit, especially in that first half.
Well said. Let's talk about a game I thought was going to be pinball scoring, and the pinball machine went tilt. Eagles 15, Saints 12, a game that Philadelphia dominated, and yet it looked like they might not get out of here with a win. They eventually do get that win, and Saquon Barkley was the big star, 147 on the ground. He runs in 2 touchdowns. He punches in a 2-point conversion. The Eagles passing game, I know they went over 300 yards, and you know Hurts had some moments, but after Devonta Smith got hurt, they basically had Dallas Goedert, nobody else. I do not want to live in a world where the Eagles are limited, you know, by the absence of A.J. Brown, the absence of Devonta Smith. There's a concussion for Smith. Obviously, we don't have injury information on a Sunday night, but Philadelphia, a game they dominate. Somehow they win 15-12, and fantasy managers are probably pretty frustrated. We didn't see more points from this game.
Concussion for Smith apologies for the siren in the background, by the way, but a concussion for Smith on a play that maybe should have been blown dead. He wasn't picking up any more yards on that one. That was a little bit surprising to me. Hopefully he's going to be all right and good for next week. Man, without him, the there are not a lot of easy answers in that passing game. And again, like, heroic performance by Dallas Goedert today after a couple of quiet weeks. Anything that we get from literally any tight end this season seems like a gift. So good job by him. Saquon Barkley with just a tremendous game-saving, game-changing run. Like the long touchdown where he actually pulled away from New Orleans defensive backs was really impressive. Prior to that, we'd seen just a super opportunistic New Orleans defense. Like, this team is pretty frisky. And you know, Derek Carr did enough until he didn't. A decent day from Alvin Kamara, a shutout for Rashid Shaheed, had a near miss in there, but it's going to be like that with Shaheed probably, right? Like, that's you. We always knew that was the way his season was going to go. He's going to be kind of boom busty. Seems like he's never going to be, you know, I part of me had hopes that at some point we would see Shaheed settle into like an 8-target, 10-target sort of role. That's probably not going to happen. But last week had been so encouraging. And then this week, you know, again, nothing. But good day for Olave. Just, you know, almost everybody produced who we needed to produce in this one. The Saints are still fun. Like, my takeaway is not necessarily that everything is crashed for the Saints and regression hit and that's the end. Like, I still think the Saints are kind of frisky.
I do too. And they get the Falcons and the Chiefs the next 2 weeks. So I would think good scoring is on the menu for the Saints in those two games. And, you know, all the nice things I said about Clint Kubiak, I'm going to stick with those. And all the apologies I did for Alvin Kamara, he didn't have a great game here, but he had 29 touches. I mean, you know, if you have that kind of volume, you're going to live pretty well. If Carr throws that pass to Shaheed, you know, another millimeter, it's a touchdown. Yeah. Shaheed almost caught it anyway. This is the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I'm Scott Pianowski sitting in for Matt Harmon, recapping the Sunday night games with Andy Behrens. We start with the games we care about, those games we're already meandering through. We'll eventually get to some of the lesser games and the games that really could have just been an email. One more signature game in that first group, Andy, I want to talk about. Maybe because I'm a homer, the Detroit Tigers are storming towards a possible baseball playoff berth. I'm excited about them. I'm excited about the Detroit Lions, who held off Arizona 20-13. Another game, kind of a fantasy tease, right? The total was 52.5. They don't threaten that, but just a lot of power football for the Lions. It was a lot of Montgomery, a lot of Jahmyr Gibbs. You saw a couple of big plays from St. Brown. He catches the one touchdown on the gadget play. Laporta made a couple of plays, not much Jameson Williams. I guess I'm not going to change my opinion of either of these teams significantly in this game. I just wanted to see the 57 point game we all expected. We didn't get that, but sometimes when a running game gets going, it kind of screws up the flows of the offenses.
Yeah. Missed opportunities for Kyler Murray, who was, you know, coming off a game in a lower degree of difficulty matchup where he produced a perfect passer rating like a week ago. Marvin Harrison Jr. still made a little bit of noise. That was good to see. But other than that, Just a lot of near misses, a lot of what could have been, I thought, on the Arizona side. Man, the Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson collaboration is just so fun, right? We got a hook and ladder play in this game, a touchdown to that was like a Jared Goff to Amon Ra to Jahmyr Gibbs thing at the end of half. Like, that stuff is really fun. The Lions are kind of a party, and I'm glad that continues beyond last season. I'm glad this is a real and enduring thing. They're just there's a big bowl of fun. Tough game for Laporta. I want to say it was an ankle injury that had him carted to the locker room, but he returned to this one. So that was good. He, of course, remains part of the problem at tight end this year.
I was hoping for more from the Arizona side. I wanted them to be a full-fledged carnival, and through 3 weeks, they've been the Goldilocks team. You know, the porridge was hot against the Rams. It was kind of lukewarm against Buffalo, other than the Harrison no-show. And then today, a lot of guys come in under their performances, but you're gonna put Harrison actually look really good in this game. I think McGriff was a little bit dinged up. Kyler, I think they had a good defensive plan for him. The one thing about the Lions, we know you can get places on their back end, but Hutchinson is just a monster. He just makes your life miserable for 3 hours. So that at least makes the secondary look a little better than it is. But I still think at the end of the year, we're gonna look at Arizona as one of those carnival teams where it's gonna be a race to 27, a race to 30. Unfortunately, today it was a race to 20. So that's the headline games, this headline group we've started off with. When we come back, the games we sort of care about as Andy and myself try to figure out week 3. We're back. Scott Pianowski, Andy Behrens, trying to figure out week three. And Andy, one of the predictions I did get right, you get to celebrate, take your victory laps. I predicted that the Chargers and Steelers would be the first game to end in the first window. And it was the first game to end in the first window. It's Steelers 20, Chargers 10. Justin Fields is just enough to get the win. Justin Herbert leaves this game with injury. At what point is it just Fields' job until, you know, he loses a game? I don't know why they would change anything. I know Russell Wilson is day-to-day or week-to-week indefinitely. What were your takeaways from Steelers and Chargers?
Yeah, no, I think that's the biggest question. Maybe it's not even a question anymore, right? He's 3-0. I think Fields has done a nice job. Like, he still hangs in the pocket for a long time and all that, but he's avoided sacks in a way that was just not the case in Chicago, right? He's avoided a bunch of negative plays. He had a really nice game. Rushing touchdown, had one through the air, looked good. Fun game. Fun game in a kind of old school way. I think the probably the most worrisome thing here on the Charger side is that Herbert aggravates the high ankle sprain. That didn't look great. He had to leave the game. They had no hope whatsoever when he did leave the game. Maybe the other thing on the Charger side is that instead of J.K. Dobbins just producing a much bigger day than Gus Edwards while they were both involved, Gus was barely involved in this one. The backfield was very much Dobbins' entire domain, right? He out-carried Gus 15-3. So that's a pretty huge deal. We'll see if it stretches into the future. But man, they were screaming at us all offseason. And even after Dobbins' big week in the opener, they were screaming at us that it was just going to be a hot hand situation and it was going to be a committee. But it sure didn't look that way this week.
Yeah, you can say the same thing for the Steelers, right? What, 23 touches for Najee Harris, just 4 for Jaylen Warren. So if it ain't broke, Pittsburgh, don't try to fix it. Nice to see, even though Quentin Johnston was only targeted twice in this game, he did catch them both. He had a nice touchdown. Just a case of, you know, you got to give guys more than a year. We've been really spoiled with rookie players being impactful, rookie receivers being impactful in recent years. But some guys need time, maybe even a coaching change. Quentin Johnson looks like a different football player in his sophomore season. Yeah. So we had to get your take on Justin Fields, you being a Chicago guy. Now we get your take on Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams and company go to Indianapolis, battle of young quarterbacks. And it's the Colts who get the win 21-16. But man, Anthony Richardson, I was told he was going to change football and change fantasy football, and you should take him first overall in the super flex. Not looking that way right now. He doesn't get involved in any of the touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor had a nice bounce back game. And Anthony Richardson, every time I watch him play, he looks like a guy who has very limited experience since he graduated high school. He didn't play that much at Florida. He had an injury plagued rookie year. It's not his fault, but I almost view Anthony Richardson as a rookie quarterback, just like I view Caleb Williams a rookie quarterback, Bo Nix a rookie quarterback. He's just played so little. I know you had the Bears on one of your main screens. Give us some Behrens takeaways on Chicago, Indianapolis.
Yeah, well, in many ways, it feels like, you know, Caleb almost feels like a more experienced quarterback than Anthony Richardson, right?
Yes,
after a limited time at the college level and then, you know, obviously limitations last year. He had a couple of terrible turnovers. Like, There was no clinic. At no point was a clinic on display in this game in terms of quarterback play. I'll say that on each side. But Richardson had a couple of throws that were just, you know, they don't belong in an NFL game. It was pretty rough. Floated another throw late that should have been an easy completion. So tough watch for Richardson. Obviously, there are going to be better days and he can still do some superhero level things. I don't think he's making bad decisions, right? It's literally mechanics and repetition and execution. I don't think it's, he's not out there guessing. If you watch the first couple of weeks of Bryce Young, this isn't like that. He's just missed a couple throws but they still win because Jonathan Taylor was great and a couple of really opportunistic plays on defense. I will say on the Bears side, and I feel like, you know, I'm going to listen to a bunch of Chicago sports radio this week and all the people who had, you know, watched Hard Knocks and gotten themselves really, hyped up about this season being like a 10-win, 11-win, oh man, are we going to the playoffs? Those people are probably going to be really mad and frothing at the mouth. And there are a lot of those people. But I actually think, you know, this is one of those games that's like a bad result for the Bears, but there's plenty to like if you just care about the development of Caleb Williams and you just care about, like, this sort of long-term trajectory of this team, this franchise, this offense. I thought it was fine. He goes for 363. He did have, you know, he did have three turnovers in this one. One of them was a really bad ball, like a late decision, could have been pick sixed. Just a really bad ball. The other two, one was a strip sack fumble. Latu just made a play. Like sometimes the other team makes a play. Another was thrown into double coverage, but he did hit Roma Dunze in the chest, and it just got broken up and it got picked off. So, you know, whatever. I don't mind my quarterback taking those chances. Adunze had a great day that could have been a supernova day. Caleb sailed a couple throws to him. One of them was from a clean pocket. The other one was on the move, and it would have been one of the highlight plays of the day if he'd actually made it. So I don't necessarily put that on him. It's not one that you look at and say, oh, every quarterback in the league has to make that throw. No, it was a throw that like Patrick Mahomes probably has to make. So I'll forgive that one. I won't forgive the other one that he overshot. But in the end, Caleb led a couple of scoring drives. It wasn't a bad day for Caleb Williams. Could have been better. I think the other thing that people need to take note of is that Roschon Johnson played a lot. Like the Bears running game didn't get a whole lot going. DeAndre Swift didn't do anything special against a defense that, of course, had just been gashed by Green Bay. But Roschon got 12 touches in this one, over 60 yards, and I thought looked pretty good doing it.
Yeah, and gashed by Joe Mixon in the opener as well. You know, just when I was ready to give up on Cole Kmet, he was really active in this game and involved. And I thought Adunze looked terrific. And actually, even the box score doesn't look that bad for DJ Moore, 8 for 78. Remember, 44 of those yards were on a Hail Mary that he caught like the 1 or 2 yard line right before the end of the first half. He was the third option in this passing game, I felt like. And DJ Moore's a good player. There's variance with receiving production. But to me, the most exciting thing I saw from the Bears today was I thought Adunze looked, if you watched the game, if you hadn't watched Chicago Bears game in 3 years, I said, well, who do you think was our first round receiver? You'd see that guy. You know, yeah. He just identified himself, and I'd like to see that. And I'm worried, like you, sounds like you might be too. If DeAndre Swift didn't do it today against what other matchup would he like us to present to him, right? This was going to be a game that wouldn't get out of hand. He would get opportunities. And he just looked indecisive. I know the Bears offensive line hasn't blocked anybody pretty much for 3 weeks. That's been a big problem for Caleb Williams as well. But I mean, if you can't play DeAndre Swift, I think in even shallow leagues, you might even think about cutting him at this point.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy. It seems like at this point they also want somebody to be a platoon partner, to be like a, you know, a committee member alongside him. So I don't think that's crazy. Hasn't looked great. He's always been, you know, and this isn't a criticism. I know I brought this up a couple times and it sounds like a criticism, but being like a yards before contact guy is not necessarily a huge criticism. Like he's been generally good at avoiding it, but man, behind this offensive line, I just don't think that opportunity is there. Like you don't get a lot of free runs at the line of scrimmage if you're a running back in this Bears offense. And I'm not sure he's the guy who's going to thrive behind this line. I do also want to issue a complaint, and this is just a personal frustration. First half in this game, I don't mind the Bears going for it on like a fourth and goal from the one. I like that call generally. I like that decision generally, but like four running plays inside, I think all of them inside the five. And then the last one, it's, you know, it's like that you only need a few inches and you're in shotgun. And you're running out of shotgun, and like, of course, it got blown up, and they ran like this terrible option at the goal line, and it lost 12 yards, and so then you didn't even get the benefit of backing up, you know, your opponent at the 1 yard line. So that was lousy. There are some elements to the Waldron experience that I'm not totally enjoying to this point.
Yeah, well, let me just follow up with one more question. I know we've talked a lot about the Bears, but hey, Andy Behrens is on the show. You have to take advantage of that. Again, Kmet was somebody I was nervous about. I didn't think he was at all playable in this game. He has a monster game, and Everett isn't involved, but I don't trust Shane Waldron. I'm sure a lot of people, great tight end drought of 2024, are going to go to pick up the Kmet shares they were throwing out, like, you know, like candy wrapper trash, you know, a week ago. is there any signal to this Kmet game, or is it all noisy?
I doubt it, because this, again, you got to remember this was a game in which Keenan Allen was on the shelf again, mm-hmm. right?
Great point.
It was also the byproduct of how many pass attempts did Caleb have? 52. We're not going to get that a lot. That enabled the big performance by Kmet. But it was like, it's good to see. Like, I'm not going to complain about Kmet having a day and being found again in this offense. But I agree with you. I don't think it's going to I don't think that's necessarily going to continue. When we have a healthy Moore, Allen, Odunze, I don't think there's really any path for Kmet to be a weekly fantasy contributor.
Right. In an offense that doesn't want to overload its quarterbacks, you know, the 52 attempts were game flow and just the way the script of the game went, it's not going to be something we can count on week to week, in part because the Bears defense is pretty good. So when we finish recording the show, I'm going to check on my buddy Dalton Del Don, our friend Dalton Del Don, because he's a big 49ers fan. And I'm not quite sure how the Rams escaped with a 27-24 victory. Bunch of games are going on. I'm doing some writing. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Juwan Jennings is basically Terrell Owens for, you know, three quarters. And Jordan Mason looks good. And Purdy looks good. And the Rams, everybody's hurt. Even the guys that you might have picked up. And any Ram you picked up this week, unless you saw Tutu Atwell coming, did not get there for you. And then somehow the Rams steal the game. So unpack this for me. How did the Rams do it? How did the Niners give it away?
Yeah, you have to worry at this point, I think, you know, and I'm kind of lumping the Niners in with the Ravens here because both games followed roughly the same path, right? Where you thought one team was just completely in control. You know, our perception is that the Niners are the better team and then they go up 21-7. Jennings is having this day. Purdy looks great. Like, it seems like everything is entirely in control and it's Kyle Shanahan. Of course, he's just going to run this thing down and we'll get out of here with a win.
Because Kyle Shanahan, of course, has never famously given up a big lead in a game that people cared about.
Exactly. It's never once happened. You can't point to an instance in which it's happened. So turns out the other side, gets paid too. And a marvelous game plan, obviously, from Sean McVay, some wonderful play calling in this one. Kyren's great, but I'd feel pretty uptight if I were a Niners fan that my defense just didn't shut all of this down, right? An offense without two of its essential playmakers in Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. Without those two guys, I don't know, you get, the Tutu Atwell day was basically one big play. DeMarcus Robinson was almost a complete no-show. It was like you knew Kyren Williams was the guy that had to be stopped, and they did not effectively stop him. And the Rams stuck with him deep into the game when they were down by a couple of touchdowns. So impressive performance both by McVay and by this offense generally. You know, Stafford making the most of a really lousy receiving room that he's left with here. Wild game though, and I just feel, I don't know, I'd feel a little bit gutted if I were a Niners fan coming out of this one.
Man, what I feel like I've gotten Williams wrong all summer because I like the player, but then they spend draft capital on Blake Corum, and then they talk about Williams maybe returning kicks, and then he's a little bit dinged up, and then the offensive line, everybody's hurt. And I'm like, how do you succeed in this situation? And then you have a game like this game where he's the only player really the Niners have to worry about, and they don't stop him on the ground. He's active in the passing game. He gets three touchdowns. Again, the whole idea with bad offensive lines is that usually you can mask it in the passing game, but you can't hide it in the running game. Yeah. Williams was still, he had 24 for 89 with a long of 13. It's not like this is like, okay, he had one 70-yard run and everything else was bottled up. I mean, he was consistently having successful runs against a team that I don't think was very worried about Jordan Whittington and DeMarcus Robinson and Colby Parkinson and Tyler Johnson. Again, all of your Ram pickups did not get home. They had the one long completion to Atwell. And kudos to Stafford, too. He only took three sacks. It felt like he was tackled behind the line of scrimmage like 12 times, but you know, only three of them were officially sacks. Sean McVay, man, this is a masterpiece win for him. This is a one to put on the pelt. You're at home. Maybe you played up the card. Nobody believes in us. We're at home. We're 7-point underdogs. They don't even think we should show up. You know, the crowd's going to be 49ers fans anyway. On the flip side, eventually the Niners are going to get healthy and Kittle will come back and Debo will come back. And I don't want to say goodbye to Jennings. He was fabulous today. He made deep catches. He made over the middle catches. He made run after the catch. He made contested catches. Again, if you told me we have a Terrell Owens highlight tape, we're going to run it and just put Jennings on the back of the jersey, I would have believed it.
11 catches on 12 targets. Obviously, he's never had a game like this. He's a vet who's always been a really good pro, but it's like a multi-purpose game. You love having him on the field. You love having him on the roster. You love having him blocking. He's never had a game like this. 11 balls for 175 and three touchdowns on 12 targets. In a day where Ayuk saw like a lot of opportunities, he was targeted 10 times himself. Jennings just flat out outproduced him. He was great. Is he going to have another game like this? No, he's probably not going to have another game like this, but there won't be 10 more games like this by anybody this year. Just absolutely phenomenal stuff. I mean, Like I had one team that I'm rooting for them so hard. I don't know if I've ever liked a roster this much. It's just, you know, decimated by injury. I've got Juwan Jennings going. I've got Cam Akers going. I got Carson Steele going. I got like every desperation Hail Mary pickup that you could possibly have this week on this roster. And by God, Juwan Jennings might carry him over the finish line. I'm so excited.
I'll always maintain. I know everybody wants the juggernaut where you have all the superstars and you rip off a couple of people in trades and you find the Puka Nacua or the Kyren Williams, whatever. I love the teams that MacGyver it and do it with scotch tape and glue. And so in fact, I'm going to give my own version of the scotch tape and glue when we get to our next segment. It's time for a break. When we get back, the games that maybe could have been an email, we'll give out some fantasy awards because Andy likes to give out awards and so do I. Back in a minute. All right, Andy, it's the speed round. These are basically the rest of the games. We're going to try to go quick. Packers 30, Tennessee 14. I got two things to tell you. One, it was a Malik Willis revenge game and what a revenge game it was. And two, if you want points from your defense and special teams, look up the Tennessee schedule, play somebody going up against Tennessee, and repeat until rich.
Yeah, listen, Will Levis, this is three games in a row with just an absolute game-wrecking play. And, you know, it was only one, but it's only ever one, right? Like he single-handedly lost the Bears game. He just every week. Like, and that's the dividing line between a perfectly solid quarterback and somebody who's completely unplayable. Like you can't keep making these mistakes if you're Will Levis, and they can't really allow it beyond, beyond October. I don't know how long you go with Will Levis if he does this literally once a week.
Well, they have Miami and then a bye. So you wonder if he doesn't play better against Miami. And today is the two picks. It was the eight sacks. So yeah. It's just, you know, he was actually close to even money to throw an interception. It was like -110. I'm like, what am I missing here? Did the Titans say they're going to hand off the ball 60 straight times? Of course, Will Levis is going to throw an interception and take a bunch of sacks. He's entertaining. I'll say that. When he's on the screen, I can't look away from him. It's just, hopefully I don't need something. If you needed Tony Pollard, you had no offensive continuity today. DeAndre Hopkins got going late in this game. Only one catch for Ridley. I think Tennessee is well coached. I think I'm a Mike Vrabel guy, but I think they got a change in the coaching room when they needed it. But right now, he's kind of a poor man's version of Bryce Young. Like all the good things the Titans are doing at times, they didn't play great today. I mean, you know, Willis had a monster game. He was very efficient. He ran aggressively. So you give Matt LaFleur a hell of a coaching job, right? Coaching this guy up for the last two games when Jordan Love gets hurt out of the blue in the Brazil game. I mean, it's just amazing what the Packers have done. But I think Tennessee has done a lot of good things on defense. It's just you can't be sold down the river by your quarterback over and over again. That's been the story all 3 weeks.
Matt LaFleur is he's reminding me of the I'm trying to wing this here. You'll know who the originator of this quote is. I think it's Bum Phillips on Bear Bryant. Who used to say he'll take his and beat yours, and then he'll turn around and take yours and beat his, right? Like LaFleur feels that way. This has just been these last 2 weeks leading that team to comfortable wins with Malik Willis. Just an absolute masterpiece, and you hope people remember it when it's time to vote for the coach of the year.
Yeah, and I'll, since we're going to have Bum Phillips quote day, I'll mention that when he had Earl Campbell, and Earl Campbell failed the mile conditioning run, he said, well, when it's first in a mile, we won't give it to him. Yeah, Bum Phillips was the man. Bum and Earl Campbell and Ken Stabler and Love You Blue and the Houston Astrodome. I just wish when the Oilers went to Tennessee – we didn't know back then how to handle teams losing, cities losing a team. What you should have done is parked all of the logo and all of the history in Houston, start over in Tennessee, and then when you come back to Houston, have them be the Oilers again. Have them be Love You Blue again. You know, nothing wrong with the Texans name, but it's not the Houston Oilers, and I can just see the pom-poms waving and even the Astrodome. I'd be convinced the Astrodome was like a wine cellar. You couldn't really see in there. I don't know why anybody ever got a hit off Nolan Ryan or J.R.
and
Richard.
Your head coach always has to wear the cowboy hat and like the leather jacket with the wool lining, that classic.
But he wouldn't wear the hat indoors because he thought it was rude. So yeah, this is the extra value. I know you guys are missing Matt Harmon because the analysis he gives, but if you need Bum Phillips trivia, I got you covered. Let's talk about something trivial, like the Denver Broncos and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bo Nix looked pretty good today, and the Broncos get out of town with a 26-7 win. Disappointing for most of the Tampa Bay takeaways. I'll say this, Bucky Irving, man, he keeps gaining on Rashad White. I know White got the vulture touchdown, but Irving was the better player. So I'm curious at what point Irving could maybe be in a 50-50. Maybe it goes to a hot hand. Maybe Irving even starts at some point. What do you got for us on the Broncos and Bucks?
Yeah, listen, I mean, it feels weird in a way to just talk about the Bucks immediately, but I thought Bucky Irving was, fantasy-wise, was your story here. Just absolutely electric with the ball in his hands. He had two touches in this one that were the most exciting touches we may have seen all week, right? Really, really fun player to watch. There's no comparison between him and White as runners. I think they're compatible. I think they're complementary. Rashad White is very good as a receiver. And you can use him downfield as a receiver. Like Rashad White is fine. Bucky Irving is really special with the ball in his hands, I think. So these two seem like a committee, and they seem like a committee in which Bucky Irving could kind of take the lead role in not too long. That said, we should probably talk about the winner in this game. And I just, you know, I guess my takeaway here is that I feel like this is what it's going to look like if and when Denver wins games with Bo Nix right now, because I am not terribly impressed with Bo Nix, but this was a good game for him. You get, you know, 200 scoreless yards. You get nice contribution on the ground. He's a very good runner. You get a bunch of field goals. You get a really good defensive effort from a pretty good defensive team, and that is how you win with Bo Nix.
Tyler Beatty, by the way, was the most of it on one run, but was the most efficient of the Denver running backs. Javonte Williams went nowhere again. It's just really hard to trust him. Another takeaway from this game with Denver, and I didn't watch this game close enough to know what the cornerback wide receiver matchups were, but I know a lot of times they do park Surtain on one guy, Patrick Surtain, their excellent corner, and Mike Evans finishes with just 2 for 17 on 3 targets. And Mike Evans is somebody you're going to start every week, but Surtain is a problem.
Yeah.
Gets the Jets next week, gets the Raiders in 2 weeks. So it's one of those things where I was like, you probably just have to start Garrett Wilson and you get what you get. You probably have to start.
He's also a guy who legitimately shadows. And a lot of times the corners that we can name, you know, they don't always travel with the number one receiver on other teams, but Surtain is not that way.
I'll tell you a matchup I'd like to see is Patrick Surtain against Malik Nabers. Cause man, is Malik Nabers ready right out of the box. Didn't do much in week one, but he's been a monster since. And he was the star player in the Giants getting a 21-15 win at Cleveland. At least we saw Amari Cooper flash with a couple of touchdowns. So welcome to the season after just catching 5 of his first 17 targets, dropping everything, getting airmailed over the head by Deshaun Watson. But man, what would it take for Deshaun Watson to get benched? Good win for the Giants. The other fantasy takeaway here is Singletary gets a short touchdown, basically does nothing the rest of the game. And then he busts off a long run in the final minute or so, going in for a second touchdown. And he had the smarts to say, well, wait a minute, if I park myself down at the 1-yard line, it's game over. It's probably game over anyway. But I just, anybody who plays with that awareness, and I have some Singletary shares, it's going to sting if I lose a game because of that. But whenever somebody's playing with that much awareness on the field, I really can't be that mad about it. What do you got for us on the Browns and Giants?
I don't know if we could talk to our stats provider about this, but it would be nice if we could award like 3 points for an intelligent decision to sit down at the 1 yard line.
Yeah, 1 yard line kneel down is a 3-pointer. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't
or
know.
Or 2 points, like a safety, a 2-point.
Yeah. Maybe it's two, maybe it's three, maybe it's four. I don't know. It should be
if
something.
We live in a PPR world, Andy. Why couldn't we have a point per kneel down
exactly,
at the one?
Exactly. Right? No, it's fair. If this game really were an email though, my entire email would be about Malik Nabers. This was like, he's had other really nice moments, but like he mossed a dude on the sideline. The first touchdown catch was unbelievable and, you know, was a very sketchy throw from a very sketchy quarterback, and he made it work. Malik Nabers, absolute superstar.
Who would you rather have quarterbacking your team going forward, Deshaun Watson or anybody else? Man, I 8 sacks in this game. It's not like this is not the Lawrence Taylor Giants last I checked. I know they have a decent pass rush, but give me a break. Oh,
it's not even the kind of bad quarterbacking that is like kind of fun along the way. It's
yeah,
really
Will Levis is fun
watch.
Bad.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson is just soul crushing bad. I subscribe to the Joe Posdansky newsletter, and he's somebody who a longtime Cleveland Browns fan, lifelong fan. You know, he lived through all the Elway comebacks and everything, and he wanted to give up rooting for the team when they got Watson, but then he realized he couldn't do it. So he watches them and just hopes for them to win despite Watson. Like last year, he got the whole Joe Flacco respite.
Yeah,
I'm hoping. I know Jameis Winston's a flawed player, and I know DTR, the other quarterback they have, is, you know, probably a limited guy. I know they paid all this money to Watson, but I just think at some point, you just have to see what's in the fridge. You get to see what else you can try. I don't think this Watson thing works. And at some point, you just have to play the best players. And that is a lesson that Carolina steered into this week. I don't know who made the decision. I don't know if it was Dave Canales or somebody over his head, but Bryce Young was benched. Andy Dalton was activated, and it led to Carolina beatdown of the Raiders. 36-22 is the final score. The Raiders got something going in garbage time. But you talked about winning with, you know, maybe lesser fantasy players. I had one team, 0-2. I'm playing the best team in the league, my man Steve Gleason. What did I do to try to combat that? I rolled out the stack of Andy Dalton, Deontay Johnson, and Chuba Hubbard. And man, was it. I thought it was Aikman, Emmett, and Michael Irvin, or I thought it was Rice, Waters, and Young, or whatever. You know, Peyton, you want to go Peyton Manning 2013 with the Broncos? Well, only four guys scored touchdowns, one of the most narrow trees you'll ever see. I want more Andy Dalton. I want less Bryce Young, and that's it, full stop.
Yeah, and this was, you know, this was the same day that we woke up to reports about how, oh, this is only temporary for Bryce Young, right? Like the national reporters were like, this is just a little pause. We're definitely going to see Bryce Young starting later in the year. And maybe that was a little bit of instant regret about, oh, what have we done? That looked like a fully functional NFL offense after, you know, a couple weeks where it was pretty obviously Bryce Young just sort of guessing downfield, hoping. Didn't look that way with Dalton at all. He made pro throws, and he's not, you know, is he a he's not a top 10, top 15 real life quarterback necessarily, but he is a good pro. And you can win games with him if everything else falls into place and you get a good matchup. And that is exactly what they did today. He was highly effective after a couple weeks of watching Bryce Young be anything but. Really impressive, and it made, you know, makes the whole thing look better. It made Chuba Hubbard like a really good player for a day, right? Like that, you know, the quarterback being competent is just unlocks so many other things.
Right, totally changes the start sit stance on Deontay Johnson. Adam mm-hmm. Thielen was actually having a really nice sleeper game. Gets hurt on a touchdown catch, of all things. On the flip side, just when I thought I could trust the Raiders, Gardner Minshew plays terrible and gets benched in this game. I don't know if it was for his own good or just want to see what Aiden O'Connell could do. But, I mean, what a 2 week. This is just the NFL, right? I mean, the Raiders go to Baltimore and win, and then they go home and lose to what we thought was the worst team in football.
And that's kind of the Raiders, right? They beat the Chiefs last year, like late in the season. That might have been the Chiefs' last loss, right? Like, they will pull out some stuff, but that's also the Gardner Minshew experience. I mean, Gardner Minshew at his worst is as bad as it gets.
So, Andy, you're going to hand out the award of the week. So I'll take the last game and put it in a quick email. Seahawks 24, Dolphins 3, lowest scoring game of the slate. It's bad news for Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devin Achane. If they can't get a quarterback in Miami right now, they don't have one. Tua's out indefinitely. Skylar Thompson was not the answer, and then he got hurt, and then Tim Boyle came in. We know he's not a bona fide NFL quarterback. The Dolphins have to ask themselves some tough questions. If they're not sure when Tua might come back, if it's no time soon, maybe they have to make a call to Ryan Tannehill, one of the several free agent quarterbacks out there, because this all gets short-circuited if you don't have somebody who's at least around league average in that big chair. The Seahawks did what they had to do to win. Charbonnet looked good. Metcalf had a touchdown. Quiet games for some of the other receivers. Noah Fant had six catches. I mean, once they got ahead 17-3 in the first quarter, just a matter of don't give the game away, make Miami drive the length of the field. That wasn't going to happen. So I still feel pretty good about Seattle. I think Geno's a top 12 quarterback, and this is probably a top 12 offense, and better days will be ahead. Just some weeks, all you have to do is put up a representative score. The other team isn't going to fight back, and this was one of those games. All right. It's Andy Behrens to give out some meaningless fantasy award. Go, Andy.
You know what? I'm going to not go kicker this week. I could, of course, go Brandon Aubrey
again. Oh, there's
some
great kicks.
Because Aubrey is 65-yarder.
The only kicker misses is Justin Tucker, by the way.
Seriously. The miss this week was 46, I think. Not looking great for Tucker. But like Aubrey makes it look like a chip shot from 65. Just like ho-hum.
He even got – I don't know if I can give him credit for this. They even got a successful onside kick. I'm at the point now where
– Oh, yeah.
If I need surgery, Brandon Aubrey's in the room, man. I trust that guy from anywhere. They were going to have him try that long kick in the preseason, and they decided not to. He is going. Here's my prediction: Brandon Aubrey's going to make a 70-yard kick this year. That's my prediction.
They've already had a chance and they passed on it. Super frustrating. But I'm going to go with a WTF of the week, and it's going to be that you mentioned it earlier: the Hail Mary that was caught by DJ Moore. I mean, you won't see another one of those all season, right? Like that Bears end the first half with a Hail Mary that actually makes it to the end zone. Good ball. Caleb did exactly what you need to do. It gets batted out of the end zone, caught by DJ Moore at like the two. He falls down at the one, He gets tackled at the one. Just the single most frustrating thing that I saw all day. Like within a few minutes, the Bears really gave me, I don't know, two or three heart attack moments.
I'm not sure if I'm supposed to give out an award or not, but I'm going to give out my award to the triplets of the week, the Carolina Panthers, the Andy Dalton, Deontay Johnson, Chuba Hubbard show, because what's better than those guys? That's going to do it for our show today. I thank Andy for joining me and going over week three. I thank producer Colin for keeping us on the air and sounding good. Tuesday, Dalton Del Don is here with me. We're talking panic meter. We need your help. Where is your panic? Fantasy mailbag at yahoosports.com. Tell us who you're worried about. We will give you the fix. Until then, for Andy, for Colin, I'm Scott, and we are out.